Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hanks Show.
We are just juggling around here. We've landed. We have touched base with Roger Stone, friend of Trump, who was a big-time guy for Nixon back in the day, and has written several books on LBJ and the JFK assassination, and of course the Bush crime family, the Clinton war on women, all those things. So an equal opportunity muckraker in that regard, although in the best sense, I say. Calls himself a conspiracy realist, not a conspiracy theorist. Roger Stone, of course, Get Me Roger Stone, which is a very popular documentary on Netflix. Hello, Roger.
Greetings. How are you?
Good to have you on the show. And I did all the book stuff in advance, so here we jump right in. And congratulations on the documentary. I saw it a couple of times. I thought it was very entertaining, very well done. Although that guy was screaming at you at the convention, I thought it might come to blows at one point.
Well, you know, that's, it goes with the territory. Reaction as I have moved around the country, continued to travel and so on, is very interesting. It depends, of course, on where you are. If you're in New York, the chances are good that people on the street will, you know, give you the finger, spit on you, yell names at you. And, of course, if I visited Alabama, I'd be a hero. So
right.
It just goes with the territory, I guess.
I understand. Now we have just the constant 24/7 impeach Trump media. They were on there with this meeting that Paul Manafort apparently had with some Russian business person in the summer who apparently had some tie to Ukraine, but they never say what they talked about at the meeting, you know, if there was a meeting. And I'm thinking, what is Manafort going to testify and say, well, yeah, we mapped out the hack? And of course they're not going to talk to the Russian guy. So I mean, what does it mean when you have a meeting?
I think it means nothing. I mean, look at the controversy over Senator Jeff Sessions meeting with the Russian ambassador. Sessions was a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. It would be entirely appropriate and common for him to meet with the Russian ambassador. Doesn't mean that they discussed, you know, treason or that they discussed subterfuge to tilt the election to Donald Trump. I mean, it's an absurd notion. This is the reverse McCarthyism, where if you are not for nuclear war with the Russians over Syria, well, then you're a traitor to the country.
Yeah, right.
It's very, very strange.
And some of the Democrats that are most critical, probably in their own day, were, you know, probably calling for detente and, you know, peaceful coexistence and all that stuff. Or probably that Gorbachev.
No, everything is reversed. Now yeah. It is the Republican, pardon me, it's now the Democratic Party that is engaging in demagoguery and red baiting, fear mongering. And to this day, I still don't believe that there exists any proof of a crime. I'm still not seeing.
Well, I'm going to ask about that because you were touted in some circles because you had some communications with Guccifer 2.0. I think it was on social media, wasn't it, or Twitter?
Yes,
or,
yeah. we had an exchange on the direct mail app at Twitter.
Okay.
So, and I released that entire exchange. It's about six or seven back and forth, like a volley.
Yeah.
It's innocuous.
Right, but
And more importantly, it happens 6 weeks after WikiLeaks has published the emails that were allegedly hacked from the
right,
DNC.
Yeah.
So, in other words, if Guccifer 2.0, who some say is a Russian cutout, I don't think he is, I don't think they have any proof of that, but it would be impossible for me to collude with him unless I had a time machine, because the documents in question had been published, you know, almost
already
6 weeks earlier.
And you have offered to testify, and you've offered to do it, you know, an open session, all that kind of stuff. I keep waiting for your invitation. You know, I want to get my popcorn if that happens. But I just so the collusion thing seems to be going away. So they've got this obstruction thing, and of course now perjury is being discussed, and they're going after the business ties and all this, and he's hiring all these Democrats to work for him. But yet, you know, throw a dime in the ocean. I mean, you're going to find lawyers who are Democrats. Isn't that fair to say? I mean, to find a lawyer who would have voted for, you know, Goldwater Miller, or voted for even Dole Quayle. I mean, it's going to be hard to find, isn't it?
Well, I think the larger point here, though, is that Rod Rosenstein, who as acting attorney general appointed Robert Mueller as the special counsel, did so on his own authority. In other words, special counsels are usually selected when the department has a substantial conflict and it can't prosecute a case, also when they have a case. We have no case here. And obviously President Trump did not direct the acting attorney general to make that appointment, although he has the authority to do so. Attorney General Sessions had taken himself out, and therefore, on his own volition, Mr. Rosenstein's given us a special counsel. Special Counsel Mueller is a very close associate, some would say a mentor, to James Comey. In fact, Mr. Mueller met with Mr. Comey to help prepare him for his testimony, was on now almost 2 weeks ago, which I think is entirely inappropriate. So from my point of view, the fix is in. The Democrats have been completely unable to find any actual proof of Russian collusion. So now we're going to hook up either an obstruction of justice charge or a perjury charge against the president as an excuse for an attempt to impeach him. This is not 1974, and it's not going to go down that way, but I think the die is cast. I think Mueller's hiring of a bunch of veterans of the Obama administration as his investigators is a slippery slope. It's a dangerous sign.
Now, is that just to show that he's even-handed and not doing a Republican partisan thing, or what's going on there?
Well, it could be that at a certain point they become completely oblique, they become obtuse. It's interesting that both James Comey and Robert Mueller, and for that matter, Rod Rosenstein, all three of them had high-level positions in both the Bush and Clinton administration.
Yeah.
I mean, this speaks to the two-party duopoly, the neocons that got us into the Iraq War, and the elite leadership of both parties that have been working together on a disastrous foreign policy, and frankly, a disastrous domestic policy. It's really one party. It's the establishment party. And certified member of the establishment party is, of course, opposed to Donald Trump.
So how long will this go on? 6 months? A year? I mean, it's a long time of nightly wall-to-wall coverage. You know, somebody comes up with another meeting. Jared met with a banker. I mean, there's always going to be that story.
Well, and it never gets resolved is the real problem. I mean, as you correctly point out, the New York Times on January 20th, in the page one story, the headline in the print edition is "Wiretapped Data Utilized in Probe of Trump Associates." That story says that the intelligence services, as a source, tell the New York Times that they have emails, records of financial transactions, and then on the 31st, they add transcripts of phone intercepts that prove collusion between the Trump gang and the Russians. That was January. We're still waiting to see those documents because they don't exist. I really think the Times has fallen on their sword. Instead of backing off of this, they have essentially doubled down.
Oh.
And this is a scandal without evidence. I mean, it's interesting if you watch it. The heads of the various intelligence agencies, Mr. Rogers, Mr. Brennan, Mr. Comey, like zombies, they repeat the exact same phrase. You know, they're highly confident of Russian interference, yet they can't produce an iota of evidence that this really happened. What they have been able to produce is a memo between Ivan and Boris in which they talk about doing it. Well, Mitch, I could talk about winning the PGA, too,
yes,
but I'm not going to do it.
I understand. You might win one hole. You know, the Coast Guard probably is part of one of those 17 agencies, by the way. As I understand it, you know, three major agencies believe it was the Russians. I mean, they would say 17. Well, that includes the Coast Guard. I mean, you know, you can just throw that stuff on the wall and see if it sticks. But you're right. I mean, we've never seen any evidence. We just have these claims. And, you know, it's not cool to disavow the American intelligence community. But, of course, as you pointed out, the Bay of Pigs, weapons of mass destruction, the Shah being installed in 53. I mean, Guatemala 54. Do we have to go on? I mean, it's not a record of perfection.
No, they have a long history of dissembling. They have a long history of you know, creating their own narrative. And I think this entire question of Donald Trump has to do with the shock of the political system over his election. They have never been able to accept his election. So it's part and parcel of an attempt to destabilize his presidency, to delegitimize his presidency. And it is, unfortunately, I think, taking its toll in the sense that the president can't spend the full attention of his office on trying to
do policy
reform agenda, because this thing is a distraction.
Well, okay.
Yet I still don't think he has any real vulnerability.
I got to tell you, though, I thought the president could count votes in the House better than Paul Ryan, because Paul Ryan, 3 weeks earlier, didn't have the votes. 3 weeks later, Donald Trump is telling the majority leader the morning of, call these 12 people. And so it looked to me like the president had, it was a better vote counter than Ryan on that.
Appears that way. I mean, look, Donald Trump is a very smart guy, and I think he is correct when he says that this is a witch hunt. I think that he is, I think he's angry about it, and he has every right to be.
Well, he does, but he always fires back because he has to feel like he has to counterpunch. It's like watching a parent not fight back as a child, so you vow to always fight back. The point is, I don't know what happened with him. But he's always got to fight back and have the last word. And so then he'll say, when the Washington Post had the story about the five unnamed sources that he was under investigation on obstruction, he goes, I'm under investigation from the people that told me to fire. You know, but so they're saying, oh, look, Trump says he's under investigation.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. He was making a good point, which is the very same guy who told him how to fire Comey was now criticizing for him for having done so. Very strange, just very strange.
Right, but you see how, as a lawyer, you know, the president doesn't always word the tweets. During the campaign, he once said, if I'm president, it's something about the Middle East, and of course he was doing a hypothetical. And they're saying, oh, he wasn't president, then, you know, whatever the case. They take his words literally, and the president always, he doesn't engage always in perfect syntax when he does those tweets. Is that fair to say?
To say the least. I mean, look, he has a unique way of speaking that works for him. But I don't know that it's not polished, it's not traditional. But I actually think it's the way he connects with regular people,
right,
because he talks the way regular people talk.
Sure.
I mean, he's no Mario Cuomo, that's for sure.
Well, no, I was there at the Moscone Center. I saw that as a Gary Hart delegate, and I was one of the few that wasn't enthralled by the governor. But I'll tell you right now, so that's part of the fodder. And I'm not sure if Trump fans are not watching CNN, MSNBC, because they, you know, because that gives them now 24 hours of coverage. The syntax of well, the president said, I mean, Chris Wallace, twice you said, you know, he's under investigation. Well, you know, and then who's the lawyer that was on Fox with the glasses? Pretty smart guy. Sokolo, or what's his name?
Yes, Jay Sokolo.
Sokolo.
Yeah, he's a very smart guy.
But he was trying to engage them in this hypothetical, and they were going by what he said. I'm under, you know, the president says he's under investigation, as he was taking the bait from the Post. But, you know how the words just get, it just gets, they mince the words every day. It just kind of wears people out. Any event, I think the Senate, what do you think? The Senate will actually get, I'm stunned that Mitch McConnell could get a health care bill to the floor for a possible vote before the July recess. I mean, who in the world would have thought that?
Yeah, it is extraordinarily unlikely, but you recall that after the initial failure of the health care proposal in the House, the administration was excoriated for their failure. Seemingly, the Democrats didn't recognize that it was a temporary condition, and it was only a matter of time before the Republicans got their act together, which, of course, they did. It looks to me like they're going to enact a bill, and therefore one of the major pledges that Trump put forward in his campaign will have been realized.
Do you think that McCain or Graham or Collins, I mean, all the Democrats have to do is find three Republicans to kill it. So, I mean, you know, that's a pretty dicey situation for the Republicans, don't you think?
It's fraught with peril, without any question. I think the Democrats know that in most every occasion they can go to Lindsey Graham or John McCain and they can find a defector. And that is something I think has really rubbed the president the wrong way.
Well, I'm sure it has. Hey, by the way, did you like the documentary as it was edited and completed? Get Me Roger Stone, because I enjoyed it, of course, but, you know, you're the subject.
I thought it was neither a love letter nor was it a hit piece. I mean, I think it was kind of down the middle. I mean, I could nitpick some little things here and there, but why bother? I mean, it only reiterates one of my most important rules. The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Well, there you have it. I will say the history on the performance in Florida 2000, I mean, that was a key moment, and I recall it, and they just stopped counting the votes. I mean, that was probably one of the key elements of the entire recount, wouldn't you say?
Yes, but it's important to recognize, and this is the part that I think is largely missing from that narrative, in essence, we were moving to prevent the Democrats from recounting the same ballots that they had already counted twice before. So this was an attempt to find new votes, in essence.
And also on the Nixon stuff, I saw you on a few panels. Everybody's doing the Watergate. I mean, Robert Redford did a documentary on MSNBC. They're all just doing the old time sake stuff. And,
yeah, actually, it's a great opportunity because it gives me a forum to address the real role of John Dean in Watergate. And since he's been ubiquitous as quote-unquote a lawyer commenting on the potential Trump impeachment, they don't say disbarred lawyer, but they should, it gives me an opportunity to review what we know now that we didn't know then, the discrepancies between John Dean's book and his sworn testimony before the Senate, for example, or the fact that two of the private investigators who worked for the White House, Tony Ulasewicz and Jack Caulfield, both of whom were gumshoes but decorated New York cops, say that John Dean instructed them to case out the Watergate 6 weeks before the break-in. That's both in their biographies and in the oral histories at Texas A&M. So slowly, the narrative of Watergate is getting corrected, slowly, ever so slowly.
Well, that and the fact that I've read theories that somebody set Nixon up on the actual passages on the tapes because they would have been hard to find, and that somehow there's somebody on the inside that would have sort of found that stuff. Do you buy into any of that stuff?
It is interesting that Al Haig seems to know where certain things are.
Right.
And then suddenly Bob Woodward knows where they are. I think this is one of the important arguments that Haig has a prior relationship with Woodward. And John Dean, interestingly enough, says that he went out at his own expense and he paid for the transcription of many of the tapes that were never transcribed at the time. So now all of the White House tapes have been transcribed. Dean won't let any other historian or author see them because he says they're his. But in his book, Nixon's Defense, which he claims is the definitive book on Watergate, he omits his conversations with Nixon on March 15th, 16th, 17th, and 21st. He does this because they put his conversation, the famous cancer on the presidency conversation, right, in proper perspective. You can hear Dean in the missing tapes coaching his client on perjury And he, it proves that he lied to Nixon for 9 months about Watergate, you know, about White House staff involvement in the actual break-in.
That is all very possibly true, and I'm sure it is based on your research, but isn't it true that what really got the president was that he taught, was it the June 23rd tape, was that the smoking gun tape?
Yes.
Where they were briefing him on the story, and he claimed to the American people he didn't get briefed until later. So, you know, that wasn't perjury, that was just a lie, right?
I mean, well, I think he is, first of all, he's confused. Dean actually works overtime to confuse him. He's trying to grapple with these details. And, of course, as we now know, his real crime is not approval of the break-in in advance. There's still no evidence that Nixon knew right. in advance and approved the break-in.
Well, most people think it was all the cover-up, so...
It's the cover-up, which is, you know, and Dean is really the one who talks him into breaking the law.
I'm just amazed that Gordon Liddy allowed Dean to live. I always thought he would knock him off out of just, you know, vindictive zeal. But, you know, what can I say? John Dean can't be invited to too many dinners with the principals, I wouldn't think.
Well, and Dean filed a lawsuit against Liddy, which he lost. I mean,
right,
slowly,
right.
Dean has used the threat of litigation to basically block any narrative of Watergate but his. The sad fact is he is the one who conceives of the Watergate break-in. He is the one who pushes it. He is the one who covers it up. And then he lies to Nixon actually for 9 months what he knew and when he knew it. So look at it this way. The potential for impeachment of our current president at least provides a forum to revisit a number of these important historical questions. I have a long piece on John Dean, which will be out tomorrow.
Well, we'll read that. I mean, that was the 1 week of testimony I missed as a kid on a summer trip. I watched him. I saw Butterfield when he said what he said about the tapes and so many other things. Fascinating stuff. We're going into the weeds a bit for those who aren't Watergate wonks, which I always was. We appreciate it. We'll look for the piece, and we'll look for you to testify at some point. I hope you can testify. I mean, that would be exciting. I know even your detractors in the media would like to see it, whether on The View or Bill Maher or whoever it might be.
Well, I think where we are at this juncture is that they'd be happy to let me testify as long as it's not in public, as long as it's behind closed doors, and I have been resisting that for all of the obvious reasons.
Well, exactly. It's no fun if you do it behind closed doors.
Well, plus they will misrepresent what is said behind closed doors. That's why I take the position that I've been maligned in public by members of the committee. That's why I should have a chance to respond in public.
Do you Yes. Do you have counsel on this yourself?
I have three excellent attorneys who are representing me, and of course they are cautious fellows, not as cautious as I am not nearly as cautious as they are, but then I know the facts. I just didn't have any Russian contacts in the 2 years, probably longer, prior to this election. So if, in fact, I was under surveillance, which I think I was from about June to Election Day, they may have found a lot of interesting information, but what they did not find is any collusion with the Russians.
All right, Roger Stone, it's fascinating. You're a busy man. I appreciate taking the time. TheStoneColdTruth.com, people should check out your podcast, correct? And, all your books, TheStoneColdTruth.com. Your friend Alex Jones was in the spotlight on Sunday. I saw his commentary about the interview. Do you think they did a hit piece on him, or do you think it was somewhat even-handed, your thoughts?
No, I think you could, because he has an audio recording of the actual, you know, studio event, it's pretty easy to see where the edits are. So I think, sadly, it was edited in such a way to, you know, make him look like the devil. They shot it at 9 o'clock at night. They cranked the heat up in this rental house to 90. They light him from below so he looks like Satan. I mean, it was pretty obvious what Megyn Kelly was up to.
You know about the temperature and the debate in Chicago. It's an old trick. Anyway,
yes,
thank you so much, Roger Stone. Take care, and we hope to talk to you again. All right, take care. Roger Stone, TheStoneColdTruth.com, friend of Trump, entertaining guest, always. And we're happy that he comes on this show.